I know summer is upon us when I get just the instinctive need and desire for a veggie dog and a veggie burger. And maybe putting on my sunglasses, which I also happen to wear at night during wintertime as well. And for those delicious summer grilling meals and outdoor entertaining, bread and buns are essential when you're serving up those burgers, hot dogs, sandwiches, and more. That's where Hero Bread steps in. Hero Bread reinvented the bread and buns that make summer great. Fluffy, delicious flavor and texture with no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. Hero Bread fits perfectly into so many different lifestyles and health goals. Getting enough fiber, cutting down on sugar, adding more protein, Hero is here to save the day. Hero Bread has all your favorites with no consequences or compromises. 0 to 1 grams of net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and high in fiber. Keep the carbs out of summer without compromising flavor with Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co and use code Andy at checkout. That's Andy at hero.co. I love chickpeas so much that at one point, my former roommate, shout out Taryn, had a little bit of an intervention with me about my daily chickpea intake. I love it so much, but unfortunately, in the wild world of podcasting and just living in New York City, I don't have the time to give the chickpeas the love they deserve, which is why I love Cook Unity. Cook Unity is the first chef-to-you service delivering locally sourced meals from award-winning chefs right to your door every week, and it's cheaper than other delivery options. My friend of the Moroccan chickpea tagine with turmeric rice. It features my beloved chickpeas as the star of the show, and a big step up from my usual sauteed chickpeas with pepper and salt. There's no cooking required for a chef-quality dining experience right at home when you use Cook Unity. My food arrives fresh, never frozen, in packaging that keeps meals fresh in the fridge for up to 7 days. There are hundreds of dishes to choose from, and the menu is updated constantly. I mean, I'm vegetarian, typically dairy-free, but I err on the side of vegan. There are tons of options to choose from. Go to cookunity.com/andysgirls or enter code andysgirls before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's 50% off your first week by using code andysgirls or going to cookunity.com/andysgirls today. It's Andy's Girls. I just breathed such a deep sigh of relief mixed with regret because I have been on a journey, not just from Rhode Island back to New York via Uber, since all of the trains from New York City to Boston all canceled because of some electricity. A stop in electricity, I think. Someone at Amtrak started watching Orange County season 15 and said, oh, no electricity here. Let's make it consistent. And then all the next day's trains were sold out anyway. So I've had a difficult, expensive weekend. And because the weather here in New York is just so ungodly hot, and I, just a delicate flower, cannot journey into the wild when it's 9,000 degrees outside, this is a sign. This is a sign that you just have to get it done. You've got several episodes to go. Orange County season, whatever the hell, is on the horizon. It's literally Thursday, I believe, season 18. Just finish 15 and you'll never have to do it again. And also, P.S., at this point, my only regret was about the quantity of episodes. I had to watch 6 through 16. I think it was 16 episodes in full, including the reunion. So it wasn't about the quality of the episodes, although thankfully have been warned by AGs who, you know, heard my initial Orange County season 15 recaps and said, like, so great, you're finding value, you know, just buckle up because it's going to be, it might be a little bit of a bumpy road, but you'll get through it. And I have to tell you, see episode 6, Bronwyn got married, Mazel Tov, when COVID began, when the cast started taking it seriously, which is scheduled to begin any moment now for at least two of them, it really felt like a just giant thud. It was wild to just remember the level of confusion, misinformation, frustration that so many of us felt in real time, and then watching that again, I'm sure when it initially aired, I cannot imagine what that experience was like. And then going through to the reunion, there were things I had blocked from my memory hearing about. And as I said previously, I had watched at some point well after the fact, I decided to watch the season 15 reunion. So I had watched those episodes, obviously had blocked a lot of it out of my head, because when I was watching it again after I went through the full season, I just kind of thought, fuck, this is bad. I don't know if it was the worst reunion in history. It probably, you know what, it probably was. I think season 12 of New York is really difficult. Lord knows season 13, they've been granted a reunion. I'm sure that would have been number one. And there's something about the season 15 reunion that's really tough. So I just kind of figured, just get through it. So yesterday, I think I watched around 7 episodes. And today, I finished out. I just got through it. I said, just buckle the fuck up. And there is certainly some stuff to unpack, but I couldn't help thinking to myself when I'm watching season 15, would it have been this bad if COVID hadn't happened? Or rather, to phrase that potentially in a more delicate way, was COVID the reason that the season was terrible? Was COVID the reason for the season? Because if COVID hadn't occurred, and again, if you're talking to Kelly, it still really hasn't, according to Kelly Dodd. It's no big deal, she says, as she flies herself back and forward from Orange County to the epicenter, the global epicenter, where so many of us New Yorkers were literally trapped. Because unlike Ramona Singer, not everyone can break the law to flee to Florida or a Hamptons estate because you have the money and access. Some of us genuinely are both taking what's been said to us seriously and also cannot afford anything but that. So to watch Kelly sit on her fucking ass at the reunion and say that the reason she had to fly during the peak global epicenter was because Rick was selling his apartment and she needed to be there to help is inexplicable. I actually kind of wonder, for anyone working in any kind of broadcast journalism field, I mean, we talk in New York about, like, for a certain period of time, you weren't allowed outside unless you were an essential worker. You were literally stuck inside. And how do you say that Kelly Dodd is an essential worker to literally anything? Not to intelligence, not to, like, basic decency and common sense. It makes you kind of wonder, had COVID not happened, would this season still have been bad? And I really thought about that for at least several seconds. And I came to the determination that, yes, I think it would have been similar, honestly, with New York season 12. When we watched the reunion, would the New York season 12 reunion have been as bad had COVID not existed? And I do think it would have been, because there were cast and conflict issues that were so profound and so deep and dark that taking a global pandemic out of the picture does not solve the issue here. And there was a significant casting issue with Orange County season 15. Like, I started thinking about likability. Now, likability is a trap. It's often used to tell women to either shut the fuck up or have a different kind of opinion, that you need to swallow your voice. You're not allowed to have anger or rage. God forbid someone views you as unlikable, which typically is like connected to unfuckable in some way. So it's all through the focus of like, what is most pleasing to the other person? How small can you make yourself in order to be seen as pleasant, good, or pure? Then you insert that into the world of reality TV, majority women casts, majority women audiences, what does it mean to have likability? Because on a show like Housewives, which embraces and thrives on an anti-hero, on an antagonist, likability sort of has an expiration date. The longer you're on these shows, the more likely that your complicated flaws are going to come out, because that's human instinct. It's hard to pretend you're perfect for at least more than one season, and the editors are not necessarily going to be interested with someone just appearing to be, you know, jolly and pure. So with likability can help someone's Housewives career. It doesn't necessarily mean you're destined to be on Housewives forever, because if you come in and are seen in some sort of villain capacity, it does feel like at a certain point, the rest of the cast is probably going to want to push you out. Like, there's some sort of level of conflict that's just, it's not workable. And then you get into these seasons where it's just two separate casts kind of feuding with each other. So being too likable or not likable enough is a really, really delicate dance. But then you get into these areas of like Q ratings. How does what's your name recognition? How does the audience view you? And are you a distraction to the show? There is a certain point with some housewives where their behavior is just so outlandish or potentially so dark. There's something about it that takes out the energy in the room and stops making the show either enjoyable or interesting to watch. This is totally my opinion. You have every right to disagree. But I think for various reasons, Danielle Staub has run into that issue. I think for various reasons, Leanne Locken has run into that issue. And certainly, I would say on Orange County, you have two significant cases of this. One is Kelly Dodd and the other is Bronwyn. And there's a lot to be said about Kelly's behavior. Andy says it himself during the reunion, like, you didn't fuck this up by your behavior on the show. It's everything that you did on social and in real time has enraged a lot of people. And then her response to that was to be defensive, to be accusatory, to say, well, Andy, you know, there are people who think you are anti-American, which left him sort of puzzled, but I think puzzled and annoyed. Pannoyed, I guess is the word I would use, the fun little Bennifer style, which pray for them, continue to pray for them. It's just, it was not, it was tough to watch. It was tough to watch Kelly refuse to acknowledge that maybe her opinions were based in some level of ignorance. Kelly's response and perspective to this was like, well, my 23andMe says that I am technically, potentially made up of so many different ethnicities that I cannot be accused ever of being prejudiced or racist against any of them, because that is a part of me. But she's also saying, I don't see color. I only see people, like using these phrases that have become so commonplace and so frustrating to hear. Her lack of accountability is what really fucked her. It really, truly, she's an antagonist often on the show. She wasn't always that way. I think this season she was trying to be something other than that, but it just kept catching up with her. And then in the reunion, it was like the full Kelly Dodd storm. It was absolutely like the repetition back and forth of talking points that didn't make sense, or things that were genuinely, the word of the day is inexplicable, frustrating, confusing, maddening, where you just saw this woman digging her own grave. It was, I don't think, a surprise to anyone. And at a certain extent, I think based on what Kelly said, you know, in the immediate after the fact, it wasn't necessarily a surprise that she was let go. I mean, the benefit of the majority of the audience, not everyone, but a big majority of the audience turning against you, and that them doing that publicly, is that I would assume that being let go of the show would be less of a shock versus, oh, budgetary concerns or some other reason, we're going in a different direction, whatever it is. Like that genuinely, I think Kelly probably had an understanding that there was this tidal wave coming at her, even though she expressed a lot of frustration at Andy for referencing and bringing it up, because God forbid she feels bad, God forbid. And then you think about Bronwyn. And Bronwyn's likability, I think a lot of people could argue, didn't necessarily exist her first season on the show. I think she made points as a housewife that maybe interjected and added a little bit of drama or tension, but I also think it was a showcase of Bronwyn being obnoxious. And then you have this season where she's beginning the season literally days after realizing and identifying herself as an alcoholic, literal days going through that process of detoxing, essentially on camera, grappling with that. Some very concerning details coming out about her marriage, future with Sean, and past and frankly present with Sean. That's happening. And also her sexuality. And so you have all of these things, these like big moment, any one big moment, dealing with the breakdown of a 20-year marriage, dealing with questions that you're asking yourself about sexuality that maybe you had been, you know, burying really, really deep and using alcohol to stop yourself from really seeing yourself. Like the way that she talked about using alcohol as a way to like deaden her feelings and emotions. And when the alcohol stopped, some of the anger and frustration she had been afraid of letting out and questions she had been afraid of letting out just completely, it was like Pandora's box. So you have this person going through all of these really intense experiences in her life, trying to grapple with one on top of each other, plus the experience of this person. Ugh, I don't even know how to say it because it's unfair to say, but it's said so many times, why not? Enjoying being on the show too much, where it felt like Bronwyn has always, there's been a little bit of preening when she's been on camera, certainly since she was fired, finding herself doing her level best to stay in like Page Six, Us Weekly, whatever spotlight, whether it's referencing really unfortunate dynamics with her children or things having to do with her ongoing, extremely contentious divorce from Sean, or getting married without actually signing the papers to her girlfriend, now partner, essentially spiritual wife, because it's not legal since she's still married to Sean. There's just a sense of like, yes, do I have empathy for what she is going through? Absolutely. But is this person in any way likable? Like there's something about her that I find curious, where there are moments where she genuinely takes responsibility. I felt like she really took responsibility in some of her conflicts, including with Gina, where she's like, I get it. I fucked up. I understand. I'm recognizing my behavior. I saw that a little bit on occasion with Sean, certainly at the reunion when there's this big reveal that, oh, God forbid, she approached Shannon's then 14-year-old daughter and said essentially, like, sniff, sniff, if you're ever looking for the good stuff, you know, I'll point you in the right direction, as if to say, if you want to experiment with drugs or whatever, I can be a little bit of a spiritual guide. I don't know if she was saying that from the point of thinking that she was going to be safe or something. I really couldn't tell you, but it was obviously absolutely out of bounds. And some other stuff she revealed, which we will absolutely get to, where I just think to myself, this person is, she's stepping over so many lines and so many boundaries in her interactions, and she cannot see outside of her universe at all. There are, of course, moments of like self-reflection where it feels like she's like learning a lesson, but then it goes right back inside. She'll triple down. She'll do something else. She seems to be one of these people that just thrives on a certain level of conflict. I don't know if that's a comfort blanket. I don't know if that's because that's something that she experienced and is trying to duplicate because it just feels normal to her. I really genuinely don't know. She's talked about feeling abandonment from her mom when she was younger. Bronwyn is obviously very complicated, but at the end of the day, do I consider her likable? I can't say that I do. I can't say that I do. I can't say that I am in any way interested in understanding more about her story. And she's kind of one of these cases of housewives who herself discusses during the season, I am an addict. I can be addicted to alcohol. I can be addicted to shopping. I can be addicted to fame. And her referencing that fame addiction, I think, is somewhat poignant because I still see it playing out in real time. But there are also other examples of her behavior where I feel almost like there's a point in which I'm watching her storyline play out feeling almost claustrophobic because I'm like, I don't really want to criticize this woman. I have a lot of empathy for what she's going through. And I also don't necessarily have personal experience with a lot that she's going through. So I don't want to just be like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I don't want to stop myself from connecting to her in some way, but she makes it so fucking hard. And then it feels like sometimes she's hiding behind some of her struggles to deflect responsibility for other elements of her behavior, which to me is like beyond toxic. There's a point early into the COVID era where she's talking with one of her older kids, I believe her name is Rowan, one of her older daughters, and Sean. They're in the kitchen. They're talking about COVID and how bad things are getting. Her child, I forget if her child identifies this first or Bronwyn does. I don't remember, but there's a understanding that her child lives with pretty high levels of anxiety, depression, and OCD. And so they're having this conversation of like, what does the future look like and how are they feeling? And so you would think a conversation with mom, dad, kid, there would be the potential when you're dealing with a global pandemic that none of these people have experienced before with such a limited amount of information and how that can trigger a person's anxiety. Bronwyn has talked about her own struggles, but to see her daughter standing there in such pain and Sean, someone who I think agrees with the title of enabling a level of denial in his relationship with Bronwyn and her relationship with herself, trying to deflect and bury, I think, a lot of her addictions, both on camera and off. Like, there's a lot there to unpack in the level of toxicity and codependency in their marriage. I mean, there's a reason they're genuinely, truly not meant to be together. Also, beginning with the fact that she says in front of Sean at the reunion, I've never been attracted to a man. You're saying this next to your husband. I mean, but, and also saying at the same time, I don't want to be divorced from him. I want him to still be mine, but I'm not going to in any way be sexually affectionate or even think of him in that way ever again. And maybe I never did. There's a lot there to unpack, but we're in this kitchen scene with Bronwyn, her kid, and her husband, and her child is trying to explain, like, I feel uncomfortable. I'm nervous. Sean is trying to, in whatever way, reassure his child. And Bronwyn cuts them off and starts essentially screaming. I mean, you could say a loud, shrill yell, but I would interject a little bit of a scream energy in saying that they're not listening to her. She's not allowed to tell her story. And then this child, who has already been described to us as someone who is dealing with an enormous amount of stress on top of challenges she was facing prior to the pandemic, who's now been silenced by her parent because the attention has to shift back to Bronwyn because it's Bronwyn's experience that needs to be centered. There's a part from the perspective of likability, I'm like, absolutely fucking not. But I also think to myself, Bronwyn in that moment to me could not look worse. She looks entirely, and I don't even mean this as a huge critique, but like very self-absorbed, self-centered, unable to see outside of her experience, including that of her kids. Like, you can say you understand that your child lives with OCD and lives with anxiety because you yourself do. Like, there's a way to connect over that. And hopefully she's able to translate some of her child's energies and emotions through her own experience. But you are cutting down your kid and saying, you're getting in the way of my expression and maybe my healing. There's a lot to pull out there, maybe not a lot that I should, but I also think to myself, is she yelling at them because she feels like she's not able to monologue? I mean, babe, you know, guest host an episode of Andy's Girls, you'll have no problems. If she's saying this because the cameras are there, or I don't even remember if there was a camera person allowed in the space, or it was, God forbid, another family member or Sherry filming. Sherry, I forget, potato, potato, let's call the whole thing off, which they did by the end of the season. Is Bronwyn's upset true upset because she feels like she's not being heard by her husband and child and not able to finish a thought, I guess? Or is it upset because she's supposed to be the star of this show? She knows she's being recorded in this moment and they're taking away from her time. I mean, at a certain point, it doesn't matter. I would like to give her the benefit of saying she's focused on how this looks on the show, which means she has an understanding of her behavior. Like, she's able to stand outside of it a little bit and be like, okay, well, you know, I wouldn't behave like this ordinarily, but I just want to have my moment so we can stop recording. Do I think that's what was going on? I don't know. I couldn't tell you. But it adds to a level of frustration that just ramps up throughout the season and reaches a fever pitch during the reunion, where I'm like, I am physically uncomfortable watching these fucking people. The only people who I think come out of this season where I'm like, I can breathe a sigh of relief, I feel like we saw light from them, humor from them, also huge, huge stakes, are Emily and Gina, which is interesting because the audience has not universally been kind to them over the years. I don't remember what the reception was when these episodes were airing in real time during season 15, but just my experience watching and binging, where I at least had the benefit of getting through this relatively quickly, was like, damn, I have a lot of empathy for what Emily has experienced and the way she's expressed herself, and a lot for Gina. You know what I don't love at all? That vicious week before I start my period. I feel like I want to crawl out of my skin. I just don't feel like myself. I have crazy cravings, usually a week and a half before. I know, when I want a little bit of extra sugar and some carbs, that the hormones are happening. And for those who are going through menopause or perimenopause, that feeling of having a struggle to find comfort in your body, or being done with menopause but still feeling like a wet sock on a busy highway. Well, lucky for me, I can manage PMS with Estro Control. And for those dealing with menopause or perimenopause, there is Hormone Harmony. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. And a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony alone. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndysGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndysGirls for 15% off today. If staying hydrated was an Olympic sport, I would get a gold medal every time. Now, AGs know that I take staying hydrated really seriously. I happen to have a health condition which requires a precise focus on hydration and electrolytes throughout the day. And especially with the summer heat in New York City in full swing, staying hydrated and having those electrolytes is more important than ever before. That's why I love Liquid IV. Liquid IV delivers better hydration than water alone with 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients, including my beloved sodium. God bless. It is so easy to use. My favorite thing to do is chill a bottle of water, throw that in my bag, go for a light, lovely little stroll, and I enjoy a packet of Liquid IV in that water so I can stay my best throughout the day. It's so easy. My personal favorite is lemon lime. I also love adding Liquid IV to some seltzer and have a little bit of a spritz when I'm back in my apartment. Liquid IV is also the hydration multiplier. It's perfect for before, during, and after workouts. And for me, as a chronic walker, I love, love, love taking a stroll around New York. It's the perfect complement. And better to have some Liquid IV electrolytes and hydration before you start to feel bad. I always have a couple sticks in my bag wherever I go. Liquid IV is the number one powdered hydration brand in America. Turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code ANDY at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today by using promo code ANDY at liquidiv.com. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Comparison is the thief of joy. Unless you're watching Real Housewives. And it is easy to envy other people's lives, especially online. It might look like someone has it all together on their Instagram. But if they're on Bravo TV, we know they probably don't. Therapy can help you focus on what you want instead of what others have, so you can start living your best life. My life really began anew 4 or 5 years ago when I started going to therapy. I had been afraid of starting therapy. It had been something I thought about for several years, but making that first appointment took me a very long time. I'm so glad I did. It has changed my life innumerably. The kinds of relationships that I have with family members, friends, work, setting up boundaries, feeling stronger, more independent, and truly empowered. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Stop comparing and start focusing with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/andysgirls today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/andysgirls. Watching Emily and Shane grapple with COVID, finding out that he, while in the hospital alone, he had gotten so bad, Emily was videoing herself, obviously upset, as Shane, essentially lifeless, is laying next to her. And she's saying, "I don't know what to do. It's getting really bad. He's coughing up blood. He can't breathe." This man, she then drops him off at the hospital. She, I think, goes with him inside and is then told she has to leave. She can't get updates. She calls at one point to find out, is he okay? Is he still alive? And the person who answers the phone in the emergency room or wherever he is says, "Listen, he's asleep. And because he's asleep, I don't have his consent to give you any more information. So all I can tell you is that he's not currently awake." To be someone who also, P.S., at this point has tested positive, Emily herself has tested positive, she's exhausted, she's afraid her husband is going to die alone, to leave her with these kids, the children they have together, her stepchildren, also children that they have together. It's just an enormous amount of weight to bear. And then to find out after the fact that he had texted his oldest child from a previous marriage and had given her life advice because he really didn't think he was going to make it through. To understand that and have this on the show, the same show where there are cast members saying this is a government conspiracy, it's not real, a level of conspiratorial thinking that doesn't entirely it doesn't entirely go away as it becomes very clear that this is in fact very real. To see the way that people are negating the reality of millions of people losing their lives and knowing what Shane and Emily went through is an odd experience. It's a little, it's like you're on shaky foundation, shaky territory, because we are understanding the reality of how this has impacted Emily and Shane's life. The fact that he truly could have died. It was a dire situation. He could not breathe and she did not know what was going on. He ended up staying in the hospital, I want to say for 8 days. I think it was like he was there for a couple days and then he had to take a medicine that took 5 days to do its job. It's just an odd experience to see these people who are so intensely affected, to see video of him just so still. Shane is not someone whose personality is still in any way. To see that and then to couple it with the reunion and some of the mid episodes where it's like Kelly's just eating a hot dog in Times Square, which is entirely deserted because we're all trapped in our fucking apartments. And she's saying a passerby, like, I don't know if it was a police officer or somebody else, one of very few people out, calling it Tomb Square. And she's saying, this is bad. I mean, no fucking duh. And you're there, why? To spend time with this guy? Who I know you're like gonna marry and whatever, but Jesus Christ, it's the level of self-absorption on a global scale is tough to unpack. And I do think I bring the extra baggage there of being a New Yorker, being trapped inside, watching news coverage of the streets being absolutely barren and empty. The only time that we really had for months to connect with each other was to clang pots and pans and scream at, I forget if it was 6 or 7 o'clock, apologies, to thank first responders and healthcare workers. It's just, it's nuts to me. It's nuts. So there are moments where these things that are coming out this season where I'm like, should this be on TV? Like some of this stuff, not dealing specifically with Shane and Emily, but they're just these moments of ignorance where I'm like, what is this doing here? Do we believe this is entertainment? There's no pushback on certain moments. There are really complicated, ugly truths that come out where I think the gender politics here is playing some sort of game and it's not in any way positive. Like the way that Bronwyn so casually talked about domestic violence that she had against her husband multiple times, including recently while she's like putting up clothing and organizing clothing in her closet. And then Andy starts to address it at the reunion to say, and Gina obviously being a survivor of domestic violence, which was a through line of her storyline this season, whether or not to share a victim statement in court was a huge, huge moment of Gina grappling with guilt that she was feeling and possible shame and just dealing with a lot of trauma related to that. And she's saying to Bronwyn, you know, how would this have gone down if you were a man? Like the way that you're minimizing this and expecting us to just kind of take it is disturbing. And Bronwyn, you can tell, is reeling at that point of how to respond. And it's just so interesting because seconds prior, when Andy is introducing that this was said during the reunion, she has this moment where, and I certainly didn't go back to rewatch it, so apologies if I'm fucking this up, you know, to the truth tellers of season 15, but she has this moment where it's like not quite an eye roll, but she's doing like an eye shift where he's talking about allegations of domestic violence, you know, physical violence against her husband, where there's just a little bit of her in her head feeling like that's too much. I didn't do that. The way that you're describing it is just too big. And I just felt so much fury in watching it because these are real topics being discussed, and to know what Gina herself went through, which she carries with her and will carry with her in some way for the rest of her life. I mean, the trauma of what she went through, it doesn't mean she cannot heal from it, but it is embedded. It happened to her. It will always have been true that this occurred. It's one of the reasons why she gets so upset that Matt is refusing to take a plea, because she's saying you're taking away from the trauma of what happened to me by negating the reality that we both know that this took place. Whether it's a legal strategy, it sounds like it's not just that, that Matt is just in denial and trying to rewrite the history of what happened. Gina is like very loudly saying, you know, this man hurt me. My husband, my partner hurt me. And now, ever since then, potentially, but certainly now, he's not taking ownership. What does that teach our kids? That this man won't stand up and say, I hurt my wife, I hurt your mom, and I'm going to take punishment for that. There's a level of frustration that she's able to express, which I had couldn't have had more empathy for. And so what does it mean when we see other cast members doing the exact opposite? Where I'm watching this woman express like really complicated thoughts in a way that to me just garners so much immediate instinctive empathy, sympathy, support. And then there are other people on the cast where I'm like, what the fuck? It's you're not taking some of these conversations in reality seriously. And it's discombobulating because I'm like, which reality are we supposed to watch on this show? Or is that just life where there are terrible people doing bad things and complicated people doing complicated things? And then this is supposed to be entertainment? Like the reality of Housewives, the thing that so many of us who watch the show know is that like people think it's just entertainment and diamonds and rosé and big dinners and big conflicts. And sure, that's a part of the show, but also there's all of this other stuff. And reality still happens to these women while they're on reality TV. Some of it happens on camera, some of it happens off. But now they're in almost, not almost, they're in a literal contract to discuss that with us, to unpack all of this. And you don't know, life comes at you fast. You don't know what's going to happen next. So to see Gina and the level of growth that she's exhibited, not just in friendships with the other women, but truly the friendship that she has with herself, to watch what she's gone through and then see other cast members deny the gravity of their experiences or deal with things in ways that just are so wrapped up in denial. It is wild to watch. I couldn't more highly recommend not watching season 15, although there's still stuff that came out of this that was, I don't know that I would call it interesting. I really, really enjoyed I was surprised to enjoy the episodes leading into episode 6. And I know the reason, one of the reasons that I wanted to watch 15, one of the big reasons was because of Shan, because of Shan's relationship with John, Shan's relationship with alcohol, Shan's relationship with tying pretty little bows over, you know, boxes of shit. It's that certainly was evident throughout the reunion. Shannon and John's journey was very tough. And there were things that were alluded to that we didn't really get a lot of clarity on. For example, she lost her goddamn mind at about a rumor that I think Bronwyn had, you know, spread or at least discuss with members of the group, which of course immediately spread, that all was not well with Shannon and John and with alcohol. And one of the reasons for that is John allegedly attended a golf tournament. I don't know if he was attending it or participating in it, and allegedly got so drunk he had to be taken home by his father because he was a mess. And Shannon's reaction to that is like, it's a total lie. He doesn't play golf. He doesn't even like golf. Versus it's a total lie because he has never behaved that way in public or private. I don't know that she can make that argument. And the difficulty with Shannon's positioning is that it seems readily apparent that she knows her relationship with John is not good. There is stuff there involving both of their relationships with alcohol and the way they seem to feed off of each other. Him, you know, always seemingly inviting her to participate, a few times where she demurs, where she says she doesn't want alcohol, or, you know, it's too early in the day and he encourages her. you can say that to a partner. Do you want a drink? Oh, you know, I'm not in the mood. Are you sure? But knowing a little bit more of their record here, it's like the whispers throughout the season, but not just the whispers, some of the shouts. You know, I'm not going to point to someone as Bronwyn did during the reunion and say, here's how I feel about your relationship with alcohol and here's how you should identify. I am going to say that there's a little bit of an issue, little quote unquote, if Shannon cannot go to a vow renewal without buying tequila because that is the only kind of alcohol that will not be allowed at said, you know, vow renewal reception because it's a personal trigger for Bronwyn. So you have to buy a bottle and then drink it. And then even they come in the middle of the reception, they're, you know, there with their kids, both of their kids, to celebrate Bronwyn's vow renewal. They go back to their room, I think to like change or something in between the, not change, but do something. I forget, maybe use the bathroom or something in between the vow renewal and the reception. And she grabs that glass of tequila and is like, one more sip, and is taking it down. It was very reminiscent of the Shannon right before her vow renewal with David, or her way of calming and alleviating her fears or concerns or whatever, or you know, interests, I don't know what, is to just down this booze quick and then have a little bit of a Dorinda-esque spiel with two of Bronwyn's kids at the reception, very reminiscent of Dorinda on the yacht, where it's like, yes, this is, you know, an LOL, this person doesn't make sense, their turtle timing, but also, you know, Dorinda's a tough example. It's a contrast that I think works. Dorinda's seeming love language that she tries to hide but always seems to come out is anger. Like when she's drinking, that anger erupts. And if you say that she's angry, well, she's not going to appreciate or accept it. But also it's just because maybe she had a cocktail and it's not real. But also her interest in drinking isn't real. So look at that. With Shannon, it's not anger that she's trying to quiet. I think it's sadness. And that sadness comes out when she's drinking, to the extent that she makes these phone calls to friends, including seemingly several calls to Gina that come out during the season and especially during the reunion of like, you don't remember that you told me things about you and John, but you did. So now you're expecting me to just like John and to not remember this information, but I cannot physically do that. Well, you know, it was a tough time. I was really upset. Yeah, you were really upset for a reason, because something was not good. And she tries to quiet her reality and the frankly sad state of affairs with her relationship with John with alcohol. And then alcohol gives her a permission slip to say out loud these fears that she has, like genuine, true concerns that she has about John, stuff John is saying about her, the fact that he does not treat her well. It's an odd moment at the reunion when Andy turns to, oh God, who was it? Oh, I think it was to Gina and then Shannon, and says like, you guys are, you know, you're such a great example to, you know, women in the audience, which great, love that part, because you found good guys. And I'm thinking, let's not put Travis and John Jansen at the same level. Sir, did you not watch this season? I know that some of it is like a little bit of a, you know, I have the benefit now of knowing that things get real, real bad with her and John. And obviously they're no longer together. And he's trying to seek his vengeance every chance he can get in real time. But I don't know that I would call him a good guy. I understand what you're trying to say, but fuck, I don't know. I don't know how you say whether or not a boyfriend is good or bad versus a relationship is just a mess. But Shannon is doing her very best to convince everyone, including herself, not just that she deserves a happy ending, but that this is the happy ending.
Did you know that you can't actually see a wrinkle? What we're really seeing when we look in the mirror is the shadow inside the wrinkle.
Top Beverly Hills plastic surgeon Dr. Lakey has helped countless celebrities achieve flawless complexions both on and off screen. He says the secret is to eliminate the shadow. And there are two ways you can do that, filling in the crease itself and reflecting light away from the shadow. Fortunately, he's found a way that anyone can do just that to achieve a flawless red carpet look right at home. He's made a free video presentation explaining step by step how anyone can visibly fill in their deep wrinkles and fine lines in less than 30 seconds. Now, as AGs know, I am spiritually mid-20s plus, but as I get a little older, I want to ensure that I look as great as I feel. And some free intel can help me get there. Go to erasedlines.com/AndyScrolls and watch Dr. Lakey's video right now. Again, that's erasedlines.com/AndyScrolls. Now, you guys know I love a solo trip to Paris, but there have been a couple instances while on vacay at my home away from home where I'm walking through an arrondissement and the directions that I'm given are not great. I have found myself multiple times late at night on these kind of side streets, which sure might get me back to my hotel a little quicker than not, but don't make me, a single woman, comfortable, especially when traveling alone. That's why I love Life 360. It gives me peace of mind and also my mom, who knows when I'm on vacation that I'm okay. She can check in as she does daily, but also by checking Life 360, she's able to see where I am and when. There are times where I miss a text or a call, and that's not just when I'm on vacation. It's obviously also when I'm back home. Life 360 works to bring that necessary peace of mind. And there are ways to customize according to your lifestyle. Life 360 has phone finding features called tiles. You can use them to find a lost item. That gives me a lot of comfort, especially because I'm someone who constantly misplaces things, including my keys. Life 360 is a lifeline during emergencies, especially with free crash detection, which sends you an alert if someone in your circle is in an accident. It has your family's back when they're on the road with things like crash detection, emergency dispatch, road assistance, driver report cards. You can track your stuff with tiles, stay connected with loved ones without constantly bugging them, and make everyday family life better. Parents have enough to worry about. Breathe easier with Life 360. Visit life360.com or download the app today and use code AndyScrolls to get 1 month off of the gold package for free, plus 15% off all tiles. That's life360.com. Use code AndyScrolls. This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. Parenting is a core part of housewives, and my new fave friend of is ByHeart. ByHeart is an infant nutrition company built from the ground up to deliver real innovation on behalf of babies and parents. ByHeart's mission is simple: make the best formula in the world while using the latest in breast milk science. ByHeart is the only U.S.-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed, whole milk, not skim. And ByHeart formula is clinically proven for easier digestion, less spit up, and softer poops versus a leading infant formula. Curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code AndyScrolls for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply. She says at one point, like, I have one shot to get married again. I just have one more shot, is how she views it, because of where she is in her life, because of how she views her age, how she views maybe dating in Orange County, that she really feels like she only has one chance. And I guess because she's on the clock, the person she's dating with now, not only will he do, but he is the answer. He's the reward. And that has to be exhausting. To convince everyone around you and pretty unsuccessfully yourself that you and this man, not only are you going to work, but you work well. Like, this is it. This is the guy. It just feels very apparent that that's not true. And it really does make you wonder about how she's going to describe John and essentially dismantle some of the stuff she said at this point, season 15, season 16. Like, what was really going on when some of these scenes were filmed? Are we going to get into that? How much of that are we going to get into? And how honest can Shannon be? Because a lot of it seems to be around their shared interest in normalizing a level of drinking, normalizing something that both of these people seem very invested in making sure is, you know, a constant in their lives. So how do you take apart this relationship, which I think now she can see was pretty toxic? How do you dismantle that? And also a DUI, which he was, you know, around you, I guess, when that happened, right? They had had a fight. This happened right outside his house, I want to say. Like, how do you dismantle the toxicity in your relationship, the terrible decision that she made that night, his role in it, potentially, allegedly, possibly, just in terms of him, them being near each other, and him, I would guess, being aware of how shit-faced she was when she left, and alcohol. Like, we know from the trailer, do we not, that Shannon is still drinking. It just makes me feel a little bit about that tequila wedding move of like, if there isn't some stuff here to unpack, could we not just have wine for a night or champagne or anything else but the thing that makes you happiest? Like, why do we need it? And P.S., she wasn't the only person to buy tequila. Kelly did too, but I don't know that we are having the conversation about questions about Kelly's relationship with alcohol. I don't know that that's necessary. It just hasn't been at the forefront of storytelling, you know? And there's a little bit of normalization that I think happens where you get to sort of write yourself a little bit of a check when it comes to binge drinking, because there's an expectation, I think, around these shows that there are going to be Cartagena sort of like orchestral trio fights happening in unison, where it's just like all of these different things are going on. And while that was, you know, a melody for generations, not necessarily rising to that level, but that there are going to be complications and there's going to be this like happy Shan that Shannon says to herself, I'm fun. I'm fun, Shannon. I'm happy. I'm fun. I'm having fun. I know how to have fun. And Shannon, maybe in real life and on the show, has connected fun with like a little bit of turtle time. There is a higher bar, I think, for consistent public binge drinking and all that that brings, conflict, craziness, chaos, where people feel like that's maybe a part of this universe, a part of this bubble, maybe also a part of their real life. And you can attribute some of that poor behavior or maybe some of that possible pattern of drinking to like, well, this is just what we do on the show. This is just the reality of what we're supposed to do, what good, bad behavior looks like. And I just think for Shan, I really genuinely, and I'm not diagnosing her or identifying her as anything. I just think that's inappropriate. I get those messages. I get those comments from people, and that can be based off of another person's experience. But this is Shannon's life. We're certainly talking about it. She's bringing her life to us. So obviously, if there's stuff here that we want to discuss, we will. But I'm not going to be diagnosing her, identifying her in any way, even though Bronwyn certainly did, Dr. Bronwyn, MD. But Bronwyn has stuff that she, you know, brings to the table. I'm sure there's a sensitivity there, but also potentially an awareness. Anyway, it's nobody's job to do that, potentially or not, but Shannon. And you cannot force someone to see themselves in a way that they may genuinely not, because they disagree, you know, X, Y, Z. That's not a path that I'm going to go down. But I will say that I really was surprised that she was choosing to drink on camera so soon after the DUI. you know, we think about what Luann had to experience. She was told by a judge, no drinking. She was not allowed to drink. She, you know, the sober device, whatever else. Shannon had a sober, I forget what it's called, but had a sober device in her car that she had to like puff into when she was driving, which made driving really difficult because she couldn't figure out how to puff. She said that on Jeff Lewis Live, like the puffing machine, it was complicated. And then the car would stall or stop or something if she wasn't puffing correctly. So she was not driving when she was potentially allowed to because of some of the steps that she needed to follow by the law. But her decision to continue drinking on 18, I just genuinely was surprised because I just kind of thought, like, you know, in light of what happened, in light of, you know, questions that people might have, and also because it might be really good for your health right now to not have anything in your body that would take you out of what was happening, that you would want to have as clear a mind as humanly possible. I was surprised by it. I was. And I'm sure that we will get into that when the premiere begins. I haven't watched any of the clips of the premiere. I think the first several minutes are available. I really didn't want to see anything. And I was really holding season 15 as a little bit of a blockade in front of what I was watching and what I was experiencing because there was so much going on. And as I say this, speaking of things going on, you are getting a real-time reaction thanks to AG Michael Arsenault, who just texted me a link. Shout out, Michael. That an exclusive from Love B. Scott, exclusive news, Phaedra Parks negotiating her return to Real Housewives of Atlanta, Cynthia Bailey filming more and more scenes. So we're just going to take a little bit of a pause from season 15. Apologies to all of you season 15 lovers. Could Frick and Frack be coming back? Sources exclusively tell lovebscott.com, and P.S. lovebscott.com has been spot on with some of their other reporting, that the powers that be are working hard to negotiate Phaedra Parks' return to the Real Housewives of Atlanta amid an unexpected suspension, then firing. Everyone was hopeful that Phaedra's contract would be negotiated in time for her to attend Cynthia Bailey's event at Lake Bailey this past weekend, but they're still trying to work out some details. The biggest hang-up were told is Phaedra's current contract with Married to Medicine. As you may have seen, Phaedra appeared alongside Porsha on Watch What Happens Live's 15th anniversary special, and their chemistry won over viewers. Sidebar, I did see that because I was quite literally there in the room in the audience. We're told the positive reception to the Frick and Frack reunion is only adding to the desire for Phaedra's return. That's fun that you book someone on the show and then you're like, oh my God, big surprise, they were a hit on the show. So we're just feeding off of the audience reaction. Of course you are. It's quite literally the reason why you did it. Speaking of Cynthia Bailey, our sources say she's been filming more and more scenes in recent weeks, way more than she originally agreed to film as a friend of the show, I bet. It's unclear if Cynthia will get promoted to a full-time housewife, but you can expect to see a lot more of her during season 16. I have to say, I am hoping to go to Jill Zarin's luxury lunch again this year. I went last year and wrote a couple pieces about it for the Daily Beast and a piece for Vulture for Dame Brian Moylan's, president of and founder of the Real Housewives Institute, for his Housewife Institute newsletter, which you can also read on Vulture. And Cynthia was there last year, and I think she's expected to return this year. I don't know if her filming commitments with Atlanta means that that might not happen. I also wonder, because there often are just like random Bravolebs who end up appearing at that event. I wouldn't be surprised if we maybe even got a Phaedra cameo. But that does make you kind of think. I pose this on social. My wish and dream, potentially, if we were talking about Phaedra's return, was to bring Phaedra back with Quad. I think that Quad's dynamics with the cast, that Quad is an excellent Bravoleb. It just, we're trying to make something happen, which is to essentially tell Quad to have a stronger relationship with her cast members, for them to be better, closer friends. And I don't think either side really is interested in that happening. And Quad, I think, would be the perfect addition to Housewives of Atlanta. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think her storyline on Married to Med has essentially run its course. And that's just me watching the dynamics between these cast members. She doesn't want to be with them. They don't want to be with her. Put her on Atlanta. She'll shine. She will shine. So just some breaking news. Don't you love a little breaking news moment while recording? It is also just, I mean, am I going to say this out loud? It is interesting that Kenya was let go because of really questionable behavior involving, you know what it's involving. And the reasons that Phaedra was allegedly let go because of those rumors, allegations that Phaedra was seemingly behind, it's just where it's like, Kenya, gotta learn your lesson. Okay, Phaedra, return to Atlanta. It is fascinating. I do also think, you know, she'd be great. She'd be great on the show. She was, you know, she would be great on the show. And she was fantastic on Traitors. So I think this is more to do probably with a resurgence that was started by the Traitors than it was potentially by the recent Watch What Happens. And she and Portia were fantastic on Watch What Happens. So we will see what happens there. I mean, I did have more to say about Orange County season 15. I just saw that little beep beep in my little text message and said, "Ooh, what's that?" That's like a little bit of a moment to have. So anyway, back to Shan. I am surprised that I'm surprised by some of her decisions going into season 18, but you know, that's Shannon is surprising and I love her. She is my number one. I also genuinely view her with a lot of sympathy and empathy. I also have really, truly no problem criticizing her. And certainly I think she's in for a tough season. I think every season that Shannon has been on is tough. I think, you know, we've heard about in other seasons about these phone calls, her making calls in a following season was making a call to Emily late at night drunk. She didn't remember it. She thought Emily was making something up. And then you have this awkward moment at a party where Emily is saying to her, like, no, you told me this stuff. You just essentially don't remember it because you were sloshed. I mean, there's a pattern here with Shannon. And a lot of it, again, is connected to bearing sadness and feeling like she's living a life where she doesn't have the ability to make choices here. Like I don't know. I feel similar in my life with when I've been in sometimes toxic environments. It's just kind of like a trauma response of like, let me just make this work. Like, I just need to make this work, make whomever feel okay and happy versus thinking, does this serve me? Does this serve my purposes? Like, is this a good situation, friendship, relationship, whatever for me to be in? And Shannon, I don't think is able to look outside of her environment in that way, not just of like, how am I playing a role in this? If I constantly find myself in toxic cycles and it's not just relationship, just like what's going on there. And also the energy that I'm feeling, if I constantly feel like I am potentially, it's not just about like being under attack by cast members, but I potentially feel like I'm not being seen or heard. What is it about this environment that I feel like I need to make work? Like, do you understand that you also have the choice to leave this cycle? And with John, it's tough as an outsider to watch it because I just think to myself, like, why are you fighting so hard? He seems like a piece of shit. Like, this is Alexis's problem now. And Alexis in real time is saying, we're shopping for engagement rings. And God bless, babe. Like, hopefully, you know, you test that diamond because Lala didn't and she had a bad one. So make sure that wasn't, you know, a gift with purchase when you bought a lollipop or something. And also, you know, is it possible that a person's behavior can change intrinsically the second that they fall in love with someone else? I don't know. I don't know if human nature works in that way. I think that people can feed off of their worst impulses, but it doesn't mean that person wouldn't also have that impulse if they were alone or with someone else. That's something to figure out. That's something for Shannon to maybe figure out. I know that she's been in therapy. I talked to her about that at BravoCon, and she was like going to retreats and things. And I love and adore her and feel a lot of affection for her and sympathy for her. And when she giggles, my heart soars, my spirit flies free. And I want to see her in a good place. I want her to see herself in a good place. And We'll see. I mean, that's kind of the interesting, fascinating thing about Shannon is that her focus, she focuses so heavily on wellness. And you see that over and over and over again with her kids, like, make sure you're taking this thing and that thing, and watching her oldest daughter go off to college. You need to pack this and this and this and this. And one of her kids at one point says, like, you're stressing me out. Please stop doing that. Like, this is too much. And sometimes a person's focus on, like, quote unquote wellness is sure about wellness and, you know, wanting to live a green life. And it's also often about control. Like, I feel like I can control these things. I want to be, you know, putting as healthy a vitamin or whatever it is into my body as I possibly can. I want to be living a green life. But what does that mean for you when it comes to the structure of all of this? Are you so focused on controlling this that it's adding a level of toxicity, which I could argue is not great for wellness? Like, when does the wellness cross a line? I think that's maybe something that Shannon might unpack. But listen, when life gives you lemons, you put 9 in a bowl and you get through season 15. I can't believe I'm saying this out loud. I might record another episode because I did not go near the Elizabeth of it all. And I feel like I must. There was a lot there to discuss. In the meantime, though, don't you just love when there's some breaking news that happens in the middle of recording that you're finding out at the point in which you're reading those words out loud? Thanks so much for being on this journey. Would I recommend that you watch 15? I mean, if you want to, you can do it. It's going to be tough at points. There is value in watching it, certainly earlier on. I think there's value later in, like, look what not to do. And it does become difficult, not just to enjoy, but genuinely to continue watching. Like, it is quote unquote rough, tough stuff. So totally up to you, but I'm glad that I did it. I'm glad. And I am glad that I did it so I never have to do it again. This is the number one reason. And I also think because obviously season 18 is going to be so focused on Shannon, on the DUI, on her understanding the gravity of that decision, the consequences attached to it, dealing with, you know, I'm sure guilt and shame, and also this man that she thought was going to be her happily ever after is no longer hers, and he's now expressing and professing his love for someone else in the cast. Someone else who I would argue is also competing to get that full-time orange once again. So a lot of stuff there, all the more reason to have watched 15. So again, I just want to thank all the AGs who encouraged me to take this journey on, because I'm glad I did. I can't believe I got through it so quickly, but also it's 9,000 degrees in New York. So please, I hope everyone is staying healthy and safe, drinking electrolytes throughout the day, and just listen to your body and also AccuWeather when they tell you not to go outside. So on that note, thanks so much for listening to this episode. Let me know your thoughts and feels, including in the comments for the little social graphic for this post about the rumors a la Meredith that Phaedra might be back and Cynthia might be upgraded to full-time. I'm really, really curious for your thoughts. Maybe that will be the focus of an upcoming Satchel Spectacular. So DM me on Instagram. Let me know your thoughts and feels at Dame Galley. Please include your first name and town, about Orange County's upcoming premiere, what is ongoing with New Jersey, thoughts on Lindsay's pregnancy, if we have any, and certainly rumors that Phaedra may return to ATL. Again, my IG is at Dame Galley. And go long form. I love, love, love when AGs take up space. And those satchels of gold, those thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Cloran Ben-Simone, will be unpacked, potentially, on an upcoming Patreon Satchel Spectacular, the place and home where I love to do those deep dives. And of course, the AG Patreon, number one way to support the pod. You get those exclusive bonus episodes at patreon.com/andysgirls. In the meantime, thanks to all of you for listening to this episode, from Michael Arsenault sending me that really timely text. And when life gives you lemons, I don't want to talk about Phaedra's return to Atlanta. Let me know your thoughts and feels about this episode, and I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.